What is up, guys? Welcome to Two's Podcast. My name is Solomon Lee, at Solomon Lee NBA on Twitter, here joined by Dave Hardesty, founder of ClutchFans.net. Dave, how you doing?
Good, Solomon. How are you?
I'm doing all right. We are in exciting times. Free agency is 5 days away. The draft was 3 days prior. Let's start with the draft. So after things were up in the air for a second, the Hornets did end up selecting Brandon Miller at number two. The Blazers selected Scoot Henderson at number three, and Amen Thompson gets selected by the Rockets at number four. By the way, I know I've been pronouncing it wrong the whole time, and I'm gonna get better at it. Someone told me on Twitter that I've been pronouncing it wrong, and I think Jonathan corrected me on a podcast, and I still continued. So I know it's Amen. I believe it's Amen.
Yeah.
Yes. So I'll get better at that. So it was the outcome we all expected for a week, but that doesn't make it any less exciting. I've written about this, but I consider the kid to be like the third best prospect in this draft class because of his high-end upside. I think Brandon Miller was a cleaner fit next to Alperen Şengün, and in a lot of regards, a safer pick. Mm-hmm. But I think Amen has real superstar potential if everything goes right. And I just prefer to swing for the fences rather than taking a pick who I deem to be kind of less exciting and more like a limited range of outcomes, like with Brandon Miller. I mean, Amen is immediately going to be, he's going to walk into the league as one of the best athletes in the NBA right away. He's an instinctual passer. He's elite at getting to the basket. He's got great physical tools, 6'7", 7 foot wingspan, and he works hard. So you're optimistic at what he can be on the defensive end. The jump shot is a wild card. Let's be very clear about that. It's a risky proposition because if you're a point guard who can't shoot in 2023, there's some real bust potential. Let's be very clear about that. Like if you're a Rockets fan, like let's be real about that. Okay, like there's a possibility that this doesn't work out. He's also risky because he played in the OTE, and that league is just really hard to evaluate. At least for me, it was. And I still love this bet for Houston. Like the guy slots in next to Jalen Green to form one of the most exciting backcourt duos in the NBA. If things break right, he could be their long-term offensive engine. I don't know. I'm just a fan. Like, what did you think of this selection, Dave? Like, and where did you have Amen on your board relative to these other prospects?
I mean, for me, he was fourth, but I mean, it was Scoot Henderson. Like, I thought, I'm going to, you know, pick nits here or anything, I thought the Rockets initially should have tried to trade up for Scoot. The Rockets, and kind of knowing what I did behind the scenes, they don't view Scoot Henderson and the way that we do. I'll just put it that way, and way other teams do, that this is this, you know, all NBA type of point guard. That's who I really, really wanted. But I got to tell you, like, you know, as I went through the process and dug in more into Amen Thompson and learned more about him, I mean, I knew a lot going in, but like really everything outside of the shooting has elite potential. Like all of it. Now the shooting is such a massive weakness, and it is huge. It's hard to imagine that getting fixed in a year or two, or you know, it's going to take a lot of work. And fortunately, Ben Sullivan's here now, and maybe you know he can work some magic. We hope. But I mean, everything else: size, wingspan, the athleticism, the defensive potential, the passing, the feel for the game, the work ethic. I mean, and his intelligence. Just you know, listening to the guy speak. Like, there's a lot of reasons to be excited, and I am excited. I think he's going to be really good. Like you said, there is a little bit of bust potential because of that shooting factor. He's going to have to get better, period. But if he does, or if he was already better, he wouldn't have been the fourth pick in the draft. That's for sure. So a lot to be excited about right now as a Rocket fan.
He might have been number two. If the shooting wasn't a concern, right? That's
where he was on the Rockets board. The Rockets had him number two. And I think a few other, I knew that before this, that a few other teams did. I didn't know the Rockets were one of them until like around the lottery or shortly after. One of the reasons I was a little discouraged initially, because I knew that there, when people were talking about them trying to trade up, there was no way the Rockets were going to give up assets to move up unless it was, they were going to lose on Amen Thompson. They weren't going to do it for Scoot Henderson. So, but yeah, they have Amen Thompson too on their board.
That's interesting. So I did hear, like, we did see that a lot. And I'm wondering, was that a consensus feel? Like the Rockets as a whole had them second on their board, or was it just a few people?
I mean, I think whatever the decision, the actual decision makers had it that way. So I couldn't tell you. I'm sure that there are people within the Rockets who are like, hey, Scoot is special, or Miller's going to be really, really good. There always are differing opinions. I mean, the year they took Jalen Green, there were some, you know, with the Rockets on the analytics side that were like, look, Evan Mobley should be the guy. And last year it was split pretty evenly. There was Jabari, there was Paolo. But I think the decision makers that, you know, where it was going to go was probably Paolo. And this year the decision makers were definitely Amen Thompson. That's who they wanted. I think if Scoot Henderson had gone two, might have created a little bit of panic on the panic's the wrong word. I think they would have been totally fine with Brandon Miller, but they wanted Amen Thompson.
Yeah, I didn't see any incentive to trade up to get anything but Scoot Henderson. Like, Scoot Henderson was a guy I would be willing to trade up for. Like, I
me too.
I see, when I watch Scoot Henderson play, I see it's hard not to see Chris Paul. It's just hard not to, especially when he operates in the half court. He is so smart. And when he operates a pick and roll, it feels like he's been doing it his whole life. And with Amen, it's just not like that. You know, it's just not like that. He is someone who is still learning that element of his game. He's 20 years old. He has time to learn it. But that's why I had Scoot Henderson just a hair above both Brandon Miller and Amen Thompson. But when it came to Amen Thompson and Brandon Miller, like, again, fit-wise, I even wrote, I thought Brandon Miller is a better fit. Prospect-wise, like, if I'm swinging for the fences, I'm taking Amen. I just, like, he's just that much better of an athlete. He's got that much better shake. He's got that much better finishing ability that I'm like, yeah, I can see this guy topping out as, okay, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but I can more realistically see this guy topping out as the best player on a championship team than I can for Brandon Miller. Where Brandon Miller, I can't see a situation where he's ever that guy. You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I think, you know, I know ESPN's Jonathan Givony talked about this. Outside of Wemby, probably nobody in the draft has more upside. Does that mean he's going to hit it? We don't know. But, I mean, there is – you look at this guy. To me, I kind of compare it to sort of my issues with Paolo Banchero last year. Like, Paolo Banchero has great size, a lot of positives, but to me, he's not fully that engine. Maybe he will be, but he's more of a secondary playmaker, not really a great shooter, not really a great defender. Amen has primary potential. Like, he could be the guy you hand the ball to every single time to initiate that play. Matter of fact, I think that's what he projects to be. And everything else, the defensive potential, the athleticism, all of those things are way, way up, way plus. So to me, Amen Thompson is a tremendous prospect, but that shooting weakness is significant. And so you always have to look at that as a significant weakness.
Yeah. So let's talk about Cam Whitmore. For the audio only listeners, if you could see me, it's been a few days and I'm still beaming ear to ear about the selection. I had Cam as the fifth best prospect on my board. I had him above Asor. I had him above Anthony Black, above everyone but the top four selections in this draft. I don't care what the medical issues are, and maybe we could talk about that in a bit. I said this on radio on Friday, but this kid could have no cartilage in both of his knees. He could be due for back surgery tomorrow, and this goodness. Was still a no-brainer A-plus selection for the Rockets at 20. Like, okay. I was screaming for the Rockets to trade up for him when he was at 10. And an hour and 15 minutes later, I went and checked. From the time I sent that tweet, they selected him an hour and 15 minutes later and gave up nothing. He just fell to them. And this feels very much like 2021, where Houston walked out of the draft with what I consider to be two top seven draft prospects in Jalen Green, Upper and Shangun at the time. And, you know, a couple days ago in Amen Thompson and Cam Whitmore. I'm on cloud nine right now. I can't believe that this happened. For a second, I thought Cam Whitmore had some sort of felony charge against him. Perhaps he robbed a bank or something. Like, I was about to ask around to see if Cam had some sort of drug problem. Like, I have no idea why this guy was dropping. And I frankly didn't care, because after the 10th pick, it was worth the risk. No matter what the situation was. How did you react to this whole Cam thing on draft night? And are you at all concerned about the medicals? We'll talk about why I put that in a second.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we were doing a live stream, Rockets Watch, during the draft. So we were talking about the draft as it was happening. And, you know, you could tell he was falling when it was around 9. I thought Utah was going to get him. They didn't take him. And then I thought, oh, wow, he just fell to Dallas. Matter of fact, I thought, well, if the Rockets have a chance of trading up with Dallas, which was a rumor before, it's probably gone now because Cam Whitmore just fell to them. And then he just kept sliding. And, I mean, yes, just like you, we were all in that room calling for the Rockets to try to trade up. It sounds like the Rockets themselves were doing the same thing, according to Rafael Stone. Mm-hmm. Said they were actively trying to trade up. Indiana said the same thing from 10 on. They tried to trade up. Nobody was budging.
I respect his honesty, by the way. Like, it takes balls to admit that you were trying to trade up.
And for a player that you did not get, right? Yeah. Like, that does take some guts. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I think it was a combination of those factors, the medical, the interviewing poorly, and then also just some of these teams, once you got down to, like, 11, 12 on, I mean, 11 was Orlando, so they knew him well, but 12 getting down there, like, maybe they didn't even work him out because he wasn't a possibility. And then they're just like a little bit shaken too. They're going to go with guys that they had graded and went with. And, you know, it fell right into Houston's lap. And I think they sniped him just in time because Brooklyn was probably going to take him at 21 without a doubt. But
I'm surprised Golden State didn't take him. Like, don't get me wrong. I am a giant Brandon Pot. I can never pronounce his last name.
Podziemski, yeah.
Yeah, he was the guy, one of the guys I was targeting for Houston at 20, right? Like he was like Keontae George, Brandon Potts, it was like a bunch of guys, right? And I loved Brandon, right? I was like, oh, if he falls to Houston, I'd be happy if they walk away with him on draft night. But are you kidding me? Cam's in your lap and you take this guy? I love that guy. Like I was sure if one team is gonna screw Houston, it's gonna be Golden State. Like it just felt very like of course, like and it didn't happen. I was like, oh, Houston can't have nice things.
You know, I think it's maybe a little bit of a different approach for Golden State because they've taken the high upside swings and it hasn't worked for their team. They went with the guy who probably fits their team well in pods, and it worked out beautifully for the Rockets. I mean, the Rockets are still a team that needs to take swings for the fences. And to me, they came away with, like, they doubled up their reward for a lottery season. They came away with two clear lottery picks, assuming, you know, medicals and everything are reasonable. And, you know, they don't have their pick next year. It kind of makes up a lot of the pain of that. And I can't stress enough how, you know, once a team uses the 20th pick of the draft, they get a player and then they usually like that player and what have you. The trade value doesn't soar. In this instance, the Rockets got significantly more value than they did for using a 20th pick. They are in a much better position trade asset wise, whether it's Cam or anybody else on their roster, because they got Cam, significantly better off, whether as a player, as a trade, whatever it may be, for this value drop. And I have a feeling that we'll probably look back, it's a good bet anyway, and say, how did this happen?
It felt very Michael Porter Jr. esque right away, right? Falling to Denver at 14. So here's the 20th pick these last 10 years, 2022 Malachi Branham, 2021, Jalen Johnson. 2020, Precious Achiuwa. 2019, Matisse Thybulle. 2018, Josh Okogie. 2017, Harry Giles. 2016, Caris LeVert. 2015, Dallin Wright. 2014, Bruno Caboclo. 2013, Tony Snell. So those are some nice players, right? Like there are some nice players in there. A lot, some busts in there, obviously. But, you know, you got some nice guys. But nobody there with, you know, an all-star selection. Right, like the one guy that might get one there is like maybe Malachi Branham if things really work out, or Jalen Johnson. But like, really, this is the range of the draft where it's a crapshoot whether or not you're going to get a rotation player or not, right? And they got someone who had, at least going into the draft, real star potential if things broke right, right? Like this was, by the way, for people who don't know Cam Whitmore's game, right? Cam Whitmore, he's this 18-year-old wing that's built like a brick house, drives to the rim like a freight train. He's a power athlete. Much like Amen Thompson, he's going to walk into the NBA as one of the best athletes in the league on day one. He's 6'7 with a 6'9 wingspan, very strong, driving to the basket, aggressive defending on the ball, active on the glass. Used to be a bad shooter, but has turned that into a strength. He's got great rim finishing and steal numbers. It's why the analytics community was so high on him going into the draft. He's got zero passing feel. In fact, I don't think I've ever used this word to describe someone on this podcast before, but he's sort of a ball hog in that he has blinders when he's making a move to score. But he's 18, so there's reason to believe that he can get better at that. I mean, he's just a great prospect. People really saw, like, star shooting guard upside with him. It's why he was mocked in that 4-7 range for most of the year. I was debating on this podcast last week about Houston's potential about selecting him at 4 over Amen Thompson. And as it turns out, they didn't need to do that because they ended up getting both without making a trade, which is wild. It's just wild. So, Dave, I mean, you kind of hinted at it. Like, now that the tanking phase of Houston's rebuild is over, how would you grade how they've done in the draft these past 3 years?
I think the last 2 years have been really good. I mean, and all three really have been really good. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. You know, they never got that number one pick, and that's fine. I mean, the odds aren't great to do that, but they won the lottery, got in the top four each of the 3 years. So that's a plus. And I think they got high upside swings in each one of those years. And they, like you said, Şengün was a secondary pick in 21, Tari Eason last year, and then now you get Cam Whitmore. They did really well with those second picks. I mean, in Şengün's case, they, you know, traded up for that pick or traded outright for that pick. But they still kind of doubled up each year, and now they've got six guys. They've got really more than that, but six clear prospects of the last 3 years that are extremely high upside. So I would say they've done in the draft pretty well. I would definitely give them a high grade for sure for how they've done in the draft.
Yeah, like there's been some misses, right? Like I would say, like, missing out on Quentin Grimes in that 23 to 24 range, I think that was a miss. But that was one of those cases where they swung for the fences with Josh Christopher, right? And I get it. Like, I get their whole mindset behind all this. You know, perhaps the Mobley over Green thing doesn't work out. But, I mean, it's not like Green's not going to work out. I think he's still going to be an all-star. At least it's just the way I see him. And as far as, like, as you said, everything else, the secondary picks, they absolutely crushed it. Like, they crushed it. Like, the Alper and Şengün pick, they nailed. Like, we're talking about potentially him. I mean, you know, still up for you. It's still debatable. Potentially him as the best prospect that they've taken away so far. Tari Eason, you know, he was mocked in that range where they selected him, but, like, he's significantly outperformed that range, right? So perhaps he was an undervalued selection. I thought he was actually Houston's best power forward last year. And you look at this year with Cam, again, a guy that was across the board, at minimum, a top 10 guy. I didn't see him on any mocks outside the top 10. I didn't see any. I went back and I checked again this morning. The lowest I saw him was 9. And they got him at 20. Like, it's really mind-blowing. And, you know, you hinted at this. I no longer care what happens with the lottery pick next year. I don't care. In fact, it might be a good thing that they don't have many more picks coming in, because you got to play all these guys, and it's going to be really, really tough for Ime Udoka to find, like, a real, like, coherent rotation here. The Rockets are going to have to make some cuts. They're going to have to make some trades. It makes me really nervous, but it's fine. Like, that's what happens. Sometimes scratch-off tickets hit. Sometimes they don't. And sometimes you have to get out early. They might have to get out early on some of these guys. But, I mean, still, like, they walked out of this with at least, like, maybe Tari Eason, okay, we could say that's not someone star upside necessarily, but five guys with star upside, you could say. Jalen Green, Jabari Smith, Cam Whitmore, and Amen Thompson. Like, that's really, really good. I mean, really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, and they're still in a situation where, you know, I mean, they're in a good situation, but I think now they're switching to sort of this meritocracy with Ime Udoka, where, like, we're going to play to win. And now these guys are going to be in that sort of environment, and they're going to have to make progress to actually play, you know, for the NBA squad. I mean, we may see Cam Whitmore in the G League this year, at least for portion of it, not necessarily all of it, but, you know, at least a portion of it. I don't think we'll see Amen Thompson there, but you never know. If they want to have him completely run a show, they might have it for, they might run it, do it for a little while. A little rare for a fourth pick of the draft to go there, but it's just possible. And, you know, now for what they're trying to do in free agency and everything, it's going to create a situation where it's going to be very competitive in training camp, very competitive in practices. And the best players are going to play. I mean, they're going to have to develop some of these guys for sure, but they're going to play whoever's helping them win. And that's the difference between this year and the past few years.
Okay. So are we sure that, like, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. Like that they really go into training camp and say, everything's up for grabs. You know, like every starting position's up for grabs. Every, like, your role on the last few teams doesn't matter. What you do in training camp does. Are we sure? Because I'm nervous that they do that with some guys or they don't do it with other guys. Because that's how they've done it the past few years. Like, they haven't exactly been equal opportunity here, right? Like, in terms of how they've been distributing, you know, earned minutes.
Yeah, I mean, playing Jalen was really important the first year. Playing Jabari was really important last year. I mean, I think certainly there are times Jalen, actually in both cases, where having them on the floor was losing basketball. Like, they were learning and making a lot of mistakes and making errors. So if, you know, I would say this year, in the case of both those guys, they probably are going to start. I feel like they're a big part of the future and they're going to start. But they're not going to get the same amount of minutes if they're significantly making mistakes that are leading to losing plays. I'll put it that way. They're going to have to earn those minutes a little bit more. I mean, I think Rafael has even talked about it, sort of artificially speeding up the process by playing these guys minutes that they hadn't earned or necessarily deserved. So, I mean, to answer your question, yeah, it's a fine line. I think Jalen, Jabari still probably are going to start. For sure. And part of me thinks they're going to earn it and deserve it. But, you know, maybe some of that is, hey, these are still the guys we're trying to build with. But I mean, case in point, I don't think necessarily Amen Thompson's going to start right away. He could blow the team out of the water and they're like, wow, he's much more developed and ready for the NBA than we expect. But I think it's going to be a learning curve. And unlike last year, they're not going to just throw these guys out there for 30 minutes and, you know, sink or swim kind of thing. I think it's going to be a little bit different.
I hope you're right. I really do, because I got to be honest. Like, I didn't really agree with how Houston was handling. I wanted them to go with that. Put everything up for grabs. Like, they don't like stop with this whole like hierarchy bullshit. You know, like let these guys earn it. If like, I get that he's a third overall pick. He's not playing like it. Play the guy who's playing better than him right now. You know, like I get that he's the second overall pick. You know, he's not hitting shots. He's turning the ball over. Like, play somebody else. You know, I wanted them to really pull the leash a little bit, but they didn't. And my hope is that Ime has the gravitas to do that, especially if they make some real free agency acquisitions that, hey, listen, like, these guys are just better than you. Just flat out better than you. And you can't really argue with it. I'm nervous, again. Do that, whatever strategy you take. I just want it to be equal across the board. I just want it equal across the board. I don't want your pick to matter. Wherever you're selected in the draft, I don't want that to matter. I don't want where you were considered on the roster relative to your peers to matter. I just want it to be equal opportunity.
Well, I will say this. I had a tweet out earlier today. I think people, at least I'm gathering from a lot of the fan base, they don't fully, I think, understand. I think that they just think, hey, we've got these 6 to 8, 9 guys, young guys. We're going to play them. That's going to be our 5 starters. One's a 6 man, a 7 man. I mean, honestly, what they're trying to do, they could fill 2, if not 3 starting spots in free agency. I mean, Brook Lopez, if they get him, is probably going to start. Dylan Brooks, if they get him, is probably going to start. And Fred VanVleet, if they get him, he's going to start. So it's definitely going to be different than the past years. I can tell you that.
Okay. Well, what I'm saying is, you know, it's fine. If they start, it's fine. If the rest of the starters, they better be the 4th and 5th best starters. best players on the roster. What I'm saying. So if you're playing Jabari Smith,
I mean, and I'll say this, Tari may start, or maybe Jabari starts initially and then Tari takes over, or Sengun does and Sengun and Lopez somehow works together. I don't know. But I mean, I think it's going to go across the board. I'm just saying that if you look, I don't think their free agent targets necessarily interfere with Jalen or Jabari. But we'll see. I mean, maybe KPJ is a better option than Jalen and they start KPJ if they keep him. And I'll add that if as a significant disclaimer on that one, because that's not 100% either. So we'll see. We'll see. But I mean, definitely the guys they're targeting, they wouldn't come here to be off the bench. They're not going after DJ Augustine's. They're not looking for guys who have been in the league forever and can just teach them how to, you know, pack their bags and go from city to city, that kind of stuff. They are looking for players who can significantly contribute and teach these guys how to win and be part of a winning, cohesive team.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, fair enough. If they take that tack, I'm game with it. Okay, let's talk about free agency. Sure. Free agency is on Friday, as we said at the top of the show. They have $60 million in space, could get up to 65. I'm nervous. I got to be honest. Like, especially with some of the names that they're targeting, I'm really scared that they this is dangerous. Like, this is like the last time they had this much space. I recognize the situation was a little different, but they gave Ryan Anderson a 4 years, $80 million contract, right? And they came to regret it. They had to dump that contract 2 years later. Now, you know, obviously that it's not perfect comparison, one to one comparison, but my point is, when you're in a situation like the Rockets, you tend to have to overpay. Where there's not that many star players in the market. There's like three or four, right? And there's a lot of teams with cap space, right? You're not the only one. Sacramento has space. Detroit has space. A lot of teams have space. A lot of teams have their full MLE. So there's going to be a lot of competition. And I'm worried that Houston's going to have to significantly overpay for the guys that they want. Now, if the guys that they want are like James Harden, like if they get that, I'm less worried because dollar for dollar, Harden's going to be worth his contract next year, right? Years three or four, whatever, that's fine. Like we can debate that, but he's probably going to be worth whatever they give him for the first 2 years. Fred VanVleet, again, similar thing. I don't want to be the team that gives Fred VanVleet $40 million. I'm nervous about that. I don't want to be the team that gives Brook Lopez $20 million. I don't want to be the team that gives Dylan Brooks. I don't want to be the team that gives Dylan Brooks $18 million a year.
How do you feel about the team that gives all three of those contracts to those 10 players? Because that's, I'm telling you, very, very possible.
I get it. Like, I get that they have the space. I get that they have always intended to use it for 3 years. This was always their plan for 3 years. I get it. This was always the year to press fast forward. But I just want to be able – I just think Houston should maintain flexibility to make trades in the future. And if you're signing contracts like that and someone like Jaylen Brown asks out in a year or two and you're in a position where you have to move – Dylan Brooks for $18 million a year, that kind of a trade. I'm not sure how receptive Boston's going to be in accepting that kind of a contract. Whereas if you accept a more equitable contract for the players that you sign, it's much more easier to construct deals, right? Like a Jay Sean Tate, his deal is very team friendly, very easy for a team to accept, right? I'm not sure if that's the kind of deals that he's going to be signing. And I kind of feel like they have a need. They have a want to spend every single dollar that they have. And that makes me nervous.
Well, so a few things on that. One, I would keep an eye. I'd be more disappointed if they give a 4 year to some of these guys, right? Like at that figure, then there's a concern. I look at the length of the deals, how long that is. I'm thinking the Rockets are probably planning on overpaying and going shorter term deals, like a 2 year deal. Again, that's more hunch, some information, but that's what I think they're aiming for. But, you know, what they're looking for is just guys who are going to legitimately contribute, and they have to spend the money, first of all, right? There's the whole floor they got to get to. They can spend it in a variety of different ways, but they have to spend it. It's how long they give it out, because they do have a significant number of, you know, high talent, high, you know, really strong prospects that are going to eventually want extensions. Jalen Green, Alperen Şengün is, I believe, due next year, right? Those guys can negotiate an extension next summer. You know, and then the next year, Jabari and Tari and whatever the situation may be, that's going to eventually, they're going to get to a point where the Rockets are the team that is having to dump talent because they have too many big deals, assuming some of these guys pan out. So I think they're aiming for shorter term deals so that these players can be significant contributors to this team, teach these guys how to win. And then as Amen takes over, maybe Fred VanVleet's on the way out, either by an expiring contract or a trade, something along those lines. And I'm using VanVleet as an example. You know, Brook Lopez, as Şengün really comes into his own or earns Ime's trust or whatever the case may be, then you're seeing a more of a changing of the guard. Same thing with Dylan Brooks. They really value Dylan Brooks's wing defense. You know, and I know Brooks, I'm with people. I'm not a Dylan Brooks fan. I'm not pushing the agenda. I'm just telling you what, you know, how they view it. So, the key to answer your question or to really follow up on your points, it's the amount of years rather than if Fred VanVleet gets $40 million. Yeah, that's rough. But if it's a 1 or 2 year deal, that's a different story.
I hear you. I hear you. And I understand that. I just, again, like I want to have flexibility because I want to be able to like, yes, it's easier to trade a contract that's $40 million expiring versus $40 million in 2 years remaining or 3 years remaining. It's still $40 million a year. And teams are it's hard for the Sixers to move Tobias Harris right now. And he's expiring, right? Like, that just gives you an example. A bad contract's a bad contract. And maybe it's easier now that the second apron's kicking in and now these expiring deals are worth more to teams. Maybe things have changed. I suspect that it's still these contracts are still going to be viewed as tough or rough. So I it's something I'm concerned about. Can we talk about Brook Lopez for a second?
Yeah, sure.
I don't understand this pursuit. To be completely frank, I don't get it. This is the third year in a row that they've tried to acquire a starting center, and I'm just like, when are you going to give Şengün the keys? Like, at what point are you just going to trust him to drive the car there? Like, because it really feels like, listen. I get it. Like, Brook Lopez, Defensive Player of the Year candidate last year, great three-point shooter, could really help you win games. Şengün's probably not better than him right now. But the whole point of this is to find your stars and to not undercut them on the way there. And this is a guy I felt they have undercut at every single opportunity they've had the opportunity to do so. They started last year with Bruno Fernando as a starter. And we're doing this again. And it's like, guys, like, at what point do you not see this, right? At what point do you not see, like, you don't want to be the team that trades the star player and he flourishes another team in 2 years. You don't want to be that team. You don't want to be the Oklahoma City regretting the James Harden trade. And yeah. This is how you put yourself in that kind of a position, by undercutting him. I don't know. It's just me.
I hear you. I understand what you're saying. I do. And there's definitely merit to it. I don't know if I look at it as undercutting. I know Şengün fans think I hate him, and I get it. It's fine. I look at it as this is a meritocracy now. I mean, I first of all, you make a great point. I don't think the Rockets, certainly certain members of the Rockets front office, are not like the biggest believers in Şengün. It's not that they hate him. They just – there are certain elements of his game that they're concerned about. They want to see a strong work ethic. They want to see improvement in those areas. And then I think, you know, there's going to be a little bit more optimism on that. What Ime wants and what he said when he came in is he wants options at center. I don't think that they're going to, like, completely phase Şengün out or anything. I would still anticipate Şengün getting 25 minutes a night, playing in a variety of different roles. And I think if Şengün shines and thrives, he'll eventually outshine Brook Lopez. I mean, that's the way I feel. But I think he's going to want to have that ability to play a center out there that is a strong defensive player, a guy who can shoot threes and spread the floor. And because he can do that, maybe it does even create an opportunity for Şengün to play with him, you know, because Şengün's a little bit, you know, plays a little bit closer to the basket. Lopez can come out. I don't think either one's going to be the one you want going out and guarding, you know, fours on the perimeter, but still, you know, it's possible. So, I mean, I'm looking at it like even guys over Jabari or Jalen, like if you bring them in, fine. I want to see Jabari and Jalen and Şengün and everyone else outshine those guys. Don't just hand it to them. Let them prove it.
But doesn't it feel like he's the only guy that has to keep on outshining the guy in front? He's the only guy. Like these other guys have not had to prove it. Like, Ben Porter has not had to prove anything, right? Like, he got the starting job day one. John Wall got a bench role right away. And and he responded to that, be like, no, hell no, I'm not doing that.
He started. KBJ, you're saying, right?
Wall was like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Like, I'm not going to come off the bench for this guy who hasn't proven anything, right?
I 100% agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah, and last year Jabari comes in, plays 30 minutes a game, and let's be honest, Jabari had a rough rookie season.
He did, yeah.
And Şengün's just played way better than everybody who they played and have they put in front of him. And they continue to make him have to prove it. And I'm like, guys, at what point do you just trade him? Like, if you guys don't believe in him.
No, that's possible too. I mean, they're saying no, absolutely not possible. I mean, I can tell you if they had made any traction on a Zion deal, Şengün would have been in that thing for sure. The way I look at it is, there are certain people, certainly his fans and others, who look at him as an absolute future star. And maybe they're right. And there are others who look at it as, man, there's significant weaknesses here. We have to balance this out with other stuff. So it's a debate is about the best way I could tell you. And there's definitely some strong voices in the Rockets brass, locker room, whatever you want to call it, that have some of that counter view. But I will say now Ime is here, right? So Ime Udoka is going to work with him. And Ime is what we have been calling on for a solid year. Give us some fresh eyes from outside of the organization, a basketball mind that we can trust, who's going to come in here, look at Şengün, look at Jabari, look at Jalen, and say, I can work with this. I can't work with this. This guy's going to play. This guy's not going to play. That's the way I look at it. So if Shingun's out there getting 30, 35 minutes a night because Ime is really believing in him, like I, that's going to change certainly some of my views, some of the counter views. And the same thing with, you know, Jabari. If he's not able to play Jabari, I'm going to be like, okay, man, Jabari's not cutting it. He's going to have to improve. I'm not going to blame Ime or call Ime, you know, the problem if he's not playing. It's Ime is going to come in and do what he thinks is best to win, period. I don't think there's any preconceived notions with the new voice in the locker room.
It does appear that the Brook Lopez – targeting is coming from Ime, though. So,
he said very clearly though he wants you know different style of bigs. I don't know if Ime is like the biggest believer in Şengün, but he definitely sees the value in him. He sees his positives, but I think the way he's looking at it is, well, I've got to have some big options, some size there, some shot blocking, some different types of options. It could come as a backup, but in Brook Lopez's case, and by the way, Kelly Eco reported, you know, if they don't get Brook Lopez, they're going to be targeting Miles Turner or Clint Capella. I mean, they've been looking at starting centers for a while, and I've known that for a while as well, tweeted as such, that they are focusing on getting a significant center. It's been that way even before Ime Udoka, to be honest.
Yeah. Listen, like, my hope is that this is kind of like Nene. Like an Nene signing in 2016, where they signed Nene, and I was very much worried that he was going to get the starting spot over Clint Capella because I thought Clint Capella was the guy to be there. And they used Nene as kind of a way to ease Clint Capella into being their guy at center. I'm hoping that's the case here. I'm not optimistic about it. Like, I remain skeptical of everything this organization does at the center spot. This organization has gained some of my trust in a lot of areas, right? Like, in terms of, like, they've maintained that cold and calculating nature that I loved about them during the Morey era, right? Like, especially when they went out and got Cam Whitmore at 20. They weren't scared off. right? That's totally something that Morey would have done, right? The signing the value contracts, right? Like Jayshon Tate's deal, totally something that Morey would have done. KPJ's not like trigger dates, all that stuff. That's some creative that the Morey regime used to do. So that DNA is still there. So I'm optimistic. Like I believe in them in a lot of areas, and they've done a very good job at recouping assets from where they were 3 years ago. But this is one of those areas where I've side-eyed them throughout the entire, you know, 2 years that Sangoon's been here. I'll give them credit for trading for Sangoon to begin with. They did give up 2 first-round picks to get him at 16. So, you know, it's hard to say that they don't believe in him. But it is one of those things where it's like he's had to continuously prove somebody in the organization wrong.
I think that's exactly what they want. They want him to prove them wrong. I really do. I think that's part of, at least that's the way it's been described to me is, I mean, again, I'm probably going to end up getting a Sangoon fans angry, but they feel like he needs the coaching. He needs the push. At least that was the way it was before Ime. Then you listen to Sangoon and Sangoon's saying, man, this is the kind of coaching I need, you know, with Ime. He wasn't used to coming here and having this nice guy coach. So this could be a good marriage, you know, Ime coming in with a little bit more tough love, a little bit more accountability, I think, than Steven Silas. And that might work really well with Sangoon. I don't think there's anything, you know, even bringing Brook Lopez in, anything that is going to keep Sangoon from starting. I mean, if Sangoon goes in there and earns it, Ime is going to be like, I know we just signed Brook Lopez for $20 million, but Shangoon's blowing him away in practices. I'm going with Sangoon. But I think he probably has a way that he likes to play, looking at sort of what he had in Boston. He had the Robert Williams. He had different options like that. He's going to want a defensive center, period, a significant one.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. Listen, like I do think he was a good coach in Boston. And I mean, his reputation around the league, even despite everything that's happened, is still very good, right? He's remains someone who impresses everyone he comes into contact with. So, you know, that does give me some comfort. But yeah, I mean, I'm just overall nervous. Like it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money that they're going into free agency with. They don't have that many roster spots. So that does lead one to believe that the money's going to be very concentrated and the contract are going to be very big.
Yeah.
I would
stress this again. Like I would not get too wrapped up. I mean, I'm not telling you, I'm just telling the audience as well, more just like into the dollar amount. If it's an overpay, it's how long you have to pay that dollar amount. That's going to matter. I know you were saying earlier, it's tougher to move expiring contracts. I do think Daryl being Daryl is trying to, you know, poach somebody with Tobias Harris' contract. He's looking for a steal. So it's a little bit different, but I do think the length of those deals is what's going to matter. Fred VanVleet for 3 or 4 years of that amount. Yeah, that's concerning, but anything less, it's, I think, going to be a really good addition to have a guy who's a low turnover player. You know, has won a title, has made some big plays. He's got some weaknesses too, but, you know, an all-star last season, a year ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And who can, I think, in my opinion, just by example, not just his voice, by example, lead this team to a more competitive environment, I think it's going to be worth it.
Yeah. And listen, this guy's an all-star, right? Like, I actually wanted them to go get Fred VanVleet, but the more I've thought about the kind of contract that he wants and the kind of extensions that he's turned down, I'm nervous. You know, like I'm just like, oh, okay, he turned that down. Oh, wow. Okay. All right. So, you know, like that's why I'm nervous, but you know, if it's a short-term deal, if there are options, if there are ways that they can protect themselves, which they've done a lot on these deals, right? They've continued to try and add protections for themselves in these deals. That makes it better. But he does make them a better team. He does make them more competitive. Next to Jalen Green, he is a very good fit. And, you know, this team needs to win next year. It really does. Like it's not just that they don't own their own pick. It's that there are no incentives in losing. Like, you know, people say that the Rockets should view their next year's pick as a sunk cost. Of course. And Like, that's a separate issue from the very fact is there is nothing to gain from being bad. There's just not. There's everything to gain from being good. Like, if you are good next year, your contracts look good. Your prospects look good. Teams want to, teams are more apt to make trades with you. You have more leverage around the league. Players may want to come to Houston if you're a winning environment. Like, this idea that Houston should just try and be bad again next year, that, oh, they're pressing fast forward too quickly. It's like, no, this was always their plan because it makes the most sense. There are no incentives to win and all the incentives. I mean, there are no incentives to lose and all the incentives to win. I don't understand this idea of people being like, why are the Rockets trying to press fast forward? Do you not understand? Like, have you not paid attention to their plan for the past 3 years? Like, you can't just start weighing in now. Like, you should have waited 3 years ago because they have been planning for the 2023 free agency class. They've been doing that for since the James Harden trade itself was a plan for the 2023 free agent class.
Yeah, I mean, and that's exactly why they're going with guys that they think will help them win. You know, having Brooke Lopez with Şengün, both of those options, they think gives them a boost. And if you look, all these guys are going to bring defense. And I think that's kind of one of the factors that they're hoping they can learn. Fred VanVleet, Amen Thompson can learn from a guy like that. Yeah, Fred VanVleet is not like this, you know, insane point guard guy. You know, he's more of a you know, takes care of the ball type of point guard, and he can knock down shots and you know, make winning plays. But still, there's a lot from in an NBA standpoint that Amen Thompson can learn from him. I think adding these guys and with Ime Udoka coaching, that's what they're looking for, is that kind of culture, veterans who can establish what this team's about, and everyone else can sort of learn from them. And then you've got all these young guys who have a lot to learn, but have immense talents, probably more than the players that you're bringing in. And then as that starts to develop, they're contributing in different ways. Just as an example, Jabari really, really struggled defensively last year. Well, what's it going to be like if he's got Dylan Brooks and Brooke Lopez just, you know, basically on both sides there? Is it going to be different? If it's still a problem, then that's a big deal. But, you know, if he's funneling to a guy who's a rim protector, if he's got somebody else also helping him on switches like Brooks, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say for sure it's going to pan out. I'm just saying that's what they're hoping to do, is put these young guys into a situation where it's not just, you know, finger pointing and nobody really knows what they're doing. They've got two or three guys that for sure are setting a baseline of what the coach wants.
So how confident are we that they actually have a realistic chance of getting Fred VanVleet?
I mean, to be honest with you, I feel pretty confident. I mean, there's a good chance. And I think part of it is because they're going to have to probably overpay. Now, I will say Rafael Stone is a contract guy. He's a contract lawyer. That's where he comes from. It's his background. He very, very much prides himself on his value deals. Kevin Porter Jr., he views as, like, you know, very creative, and that contract. Jay Sean Tate getting that deal. You know, KJ Martin is on a cheap deal. Maybe that something happens there. It's going to be tough to pull off, but he's still going to be looking for that type of thing. But I think in Fred VanVleet's case, it may require a significant overpay on a shorter term deal. And I don't want to say, like, you know, that it's going to be a done deal or anything like that. But assuming Harden doesn't come back and say, yes, I'm willing to take this range of money where he really wasn't before, you know, I think that's Rockets are going to basically do an all out blitz for Fred VanVleet.
Doesn't it feel like the Harden thing is, like, it's straight. It feels like it's done. Like, it feels like he's already going back. Like the roller coaster ride we've been on these past few months, it feels so anticlimactic for it to end on June 20th, right? Like, it feels like ever since June 20th, that buzz has just been, oh, he's going back to Philly now. And that's kind of the advantage that Philly had this entire time. They could talk to him, right? Whereas the Rockets have to wait till July to talk to him. But doesn't it feel like that's dead?
Well, I mean, you know, like, I just say that teams, and especially in this instance, like, there's no waiting, you know, like, they're certainly not violating rules, but, like, these agents, you know, they all know there's communication going on. Let's just be honest about all these teams.
Yeah, but
and I think that's
openly communicate if you're correct.
But there was already communication going on that shifted some of that. And you know, to my surprise, I'll be honest, I thought basically that, you know, the Fertittas would maybe cave a little bit, like, okay, we got to bring Harden back, so let's give him more money, more years, whatever. I think Harden, his interest in coming to Houston is real. You know, my feeling, I'll just put it that way, is I think the Rockets had a line in the sand and it wasn't enough for Harden. You know, it could have been a 3-year, $90 million type of deal, something in that range. Again, I don't know that for a fact, but that's kind of what I'm going to guess. And it maybe just wasn't what he wanted. So that's my hunch right now and feeling on it, and why it kind of shifted. But let's see what kind of contract he signs with Philly if he does go back there. I'll be curious if Daryl does give him more than that.
Yeah, I mean, and at the same time, no one, we're still not at the point where it's like definitive, right? Like no one's like, oh,
right,
he's definitively coming back. No one's confident. It's like that's probably a good job by Harden's agent, like keep it in house. Yeah.
Yeah, and look at the NBA. You can wake up one morning, Wednesday morning, and then next thing you know, like the reports are, you know, things have shifted seismically that, you know, James Harden is thinking of going back to Houston again. That is absolutely very, very possible the way the NBA news cycle goes. Wouldn't put it past Woj or, you know, Shams to tweet out something like that. So,
something to change the betting lines. But yeah, I mean,
yeah. So yeah, exactly. I know what you're saying, yeah. Which is, by the way, really, really funny. But yeah, it's you know, so we don't know, but I think right now, and again, this is just me reading the tea leaves. It really feels like Fred VanVleet, Dylan Brooks, Brooke Lopez are three of the top targets.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. Like if you tell me last year that the Rockets would come out of the 2023 free agency with Fred VanVleet, like if that was one of the, like, put it in stone, like I'm not saying that's what you're saying. I'm saying if that was someone that the Rockets had a realistic chance of getting, I'd be ecstatic. It's just the numbers just making me nervous. It's really the number. The years, yeah, I'm sure if it's not that many years, it eases it some, but still, like, I am still concerned about the number.
One thing to add to this, it's nice about VanVleet is if Amen Thompson is ready at some point to take the reins, VanVleet plays well off the ball. He's not like so tied to it where he's got to have it the whole time. So I think there's some flexibility, especially if it's a 2-year deal, that could make it really nice for the Rockets.
Do you want to talk about some of these other guys? Like, really like this idea of them getting Chris Middleton, right? Like, I just felt like, oh, he's going back to Milwaukee. It's always felt like that. But at the same time, this guy really wants his money. If you read his quotes these last couple of years, he's been taking discount deals to come back to Milwaukee. And now it feels like this is the summer where it's like, he's getting his max. Like, he's getting his max. I don't know how many years. You know, I'm not sure if he's getting, like, all of his years. But he's dead set on getting the full number. So is that part of the reasoning they're in play for Brooke Lopez? Because it's like, oh, Chris Middleton might draw out Brooke Lopez. Or maybe it's the other way around. Like, they overpay for Chris Middleton, and so they don't want to overpay for Brooke Lopez to get Brooke Lopez back.
I mean, I think that's kind of the feeling. But at the same time, I think Brooke Lopez has been a pretty important player for that team. He's 35. He's, you know, getting up there a little bit. I think for his style of play, he'd be fine. But still, you know, there's always that risk. Nobody knows what's going to happen with Milwaukee. Really, nobody knows. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Giannis is eligible for extension at some point coming up in the future. And there's a lot of, you know, nervous people there, I think, in regard to that. And the whole, you know, luxury tax issue. So that's the feeling, that maybe Brooke Lopez could shake out as a casualty there, that the Rockets could beat what Milwaukee would offer. And does he want to keep trying to win a title so much in Milwaukee with what they have and what's working? I mean, he does have a new coach coming up there. Or does he want to, you know, try something new and get paid more for it? You know, that's kind of the way I think I look at it. So we don't know. As far as Chris Middleton, some of his injury stuff, I'm not super keen on the idea because I do agree with you. It's going to take a lot of money to get him, but he's a hell of a player. I mean, he's a great player, significantly underrated. So I don't think I want to be that team that gives him the max at this point. Well,
the reason is like the reason I'm more open to being that team is because, like, again, like if we're talking about efficiency for dollars spent, you're going to get more for your dollar with the high end stars. Right, with stars. So for the Hardens, the Middletons, the Van Vliet, you're going to get more dollar for dollar with those guys than you will with the Dylan Brooks, with the Brook Lopez's. Like, it's just like you're less likely just to waste money if you spend on someone like Middleton. That's kind of my theory of the case with their free agency. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean it does make some sense. I guess for me, it just feels kind of like he's had some injury issues that I haven't dug into completely, but I remember reading some reports that just there was real concern about, you know, him long-term. I don't know if that's completely nonsense or not, but to me, it makes me a little bit more concerned about giving him a deal because I don't know if Middleton would be like the guy who takes the 1 or 2 year deal at an extreme overpay. Could be wrong on that, but he's just not who I don't believe would target right now.
Who are some guys you would target?
Wow. Well, it's interesting you bring that up. I mean, I'm definitely in the Harden camp. I think that ship's going to sail, and I'm okay with Fred VanVleet. I don't love the Fred VanVleet thing, but I see the merits of it, and I think I see what they're trying to do. Don't fully agree with it, but I think I do. Dylan Brooks, I got to be honest with you. I don't want Dylan Brooks simply because I don't feel like he is going to rein in his shots. I mean, we even talked recently about feeling like, you know, he basically could do a lot more or score a lot more than he did in Memphis. And I'm thinking, we don't want this guy for that, right? I do agree, though, that he's a very good wing defender. I think the Rockets believe he's arguably one of the best, if not the best, in the league. So I think that will definitely be a benefit. But I think on the court, I definitely have concerns about an extremely inefficient guy who takes a lot of shots. That part is he is not as high on my list. But I absolutely believe that they need the Brook Lopez thing, I absolutely believe they need another option. Doesn't have to be a starter over Şengün, but you need a strong defensive option. And in my opinion, Brook Lopez with his defense and his shooting, which is pretty rare, would be a terrific get. So to answer your question, Fred VanVleet and Brook Lopez would probably be high on my list, assuming Harden is not coming here, not interested in what they're offering.
Yeah. I mean, two guys I would keep an eye on, Harrison Barnes and Jeremy Grant. Like, it feels like we're getting no news about them. And we haven't seen any links to Houston necessarily, but I'm like, you know, those are some guys that are interesting. And, like, I feel like Harrison Barnes in particular can be had for a reasonable deal, relatively compared to the rest of the market. I feel like he's someone that we're looking at as, like, might be for another team, for, like, a contender, be a non-taxpayer MLE guy. Maybe for a team like Houston, you're looking at 18 a year, which reasonable. Like, I would love Harrison Barnes on $18 million a year. Even 20, I think that's reasonable for Harrison Barnes. Jeremy Grant, another guy where it's like Portland's kind of in flux and everybody's talking about Dame Lillard. No one's talking about Jeremy Grant. And Jeremy Grant's a guy that you can kind of swoop up under the radar and see if you can get, especially if they do end up trading Damian Lillard and Portland's not very aggressive about re-signing him. So that's another name. Cam Johnson, just kind of like no one's talking about him anymore because everybody just assumes that Brooklyn's going to match any deal that he gets. And yeah, if Houston swings and misses on all their guys, that's a decent guy to throw some money at because you're taking someone good away from a guy where you own their pick as well as getting a helpful player. You know, it's like a 2-for-1 kind of special there. You know, the contract's going to be rough if you do overpay to get him. But it's just something I would keep an eye on if they swing and miss on all these guys. You know, there's some interesting options there still.
Yeah, I mean, I should say Cam Johnson would probably be one of my top, if not the top option. I mean, I think for me, actually, I should say getting a point guard is the most important thing for me for the Rockets. That's like the thing that they need to do, period. Whether it's via trade or free agency, they need to do that. But beyond that, Cam Johnson, I would love to do that. I think I just haven't really talked about it much. My understanding, Rockets probably view that as, look, Brooklyn's going to match, tying up your money. And I think
you missed some of your guys. Yeah.
Yeah. And I will say I'm absolutely hoping somebody out there significantly overpays. Detroit, obviously, Monty Williams has experience with him from Phoenix. I'm hoping somebody makes it extremely painful for Brooklyn to match, or that if Brooklyn does match, it just hurts their situation. Rockets owning those picks for the next 4 years, two picks, two swaps. It absolutely matters. But I would love to get Cam Johnson. I think the Rockets look at it like if they were to get him, it's going to be so high that it wouldn't be the value contract that they seek.
Are you more apt to make a trade with some of these Brooklyn assets now that Houston has kind of, like, to be honest, like, ever since they got Cam Whitmore at 20, I'm like, okay, now it feels kind of – it makes a lot more sense to move some of these picks, some of these young players. Like, KJ Martin's a guy. Like, when we're talking about roster spots, right, and playing time, it's going to be a crunch here. Like, if they sign three guys, they're going to have to waive some guys. They're going to have to – Knicks is gone. Dacian Knicks is gone. Like if you're a Dacian Knicks fan, listen to this podcast episode, I have – some rough news for you, man. He's not coming back. I mean, but there's some other guys. It's not enough. They're gonna have to waive, I think, two more players to get to the point where they need to be to sign three guys. And the guys that make the most sense are your Jayshon Tates. The guys that make the most sense are your KJ Martins to trade. You know, like, these are the guys that I would look at. And if I'm trading those guys, I forgot Usman Garuba and Josh Christopher. Those guys I would keep an eye on. If I'm trading those guys, I don't want it to be in vain. I want to kind of make a significant trade if I'm going to do it. Like, I want to throw in assets behind it and get a real something back versus just, oh, here, take these guys so we can go make some trades and signings.
To answer your question, I wouldn't trade it unless it was a significant player. Bottom line, I think Brooklyn is, I think there were, when you throw in the playoffs, they were 13-19 to end, you know, ever since the KD trade with Bridges back and playing. They weren't as good as people were led to. I mean, they were in the playoffs and we saw that team in the playoffs. Well, all the heavy lifting to get there was done by KD and Kyrie. You know, they have a lot of picks. They could make some changes, but, and they might, you know, maybe they pursue a Damian Lillard or somebody that significantly boosts their prospects, but right now, I think ESPN projects it to be the ninth pick of the draft. It should be a lottery pick. Doesn't mean I won't trade it, but I'm just saying, to me, it needs to be a significant player, or there needs to be significant protection on that pick. You know, because if you're going to trade it out, you could put protection on it.
It'll be funny if they trade it to Brooklyn and they add protections to the pick. That'd be hilarious.
That would be cold. Absolutely, yeah. Cold-hearted. Yes. Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, right, too. Like, getting Cam Whitmore as sort of a bonus. Now, if you do feel like, okay, we've got three guys, four guys of our draft players that, and we're really cooking with these guys, we want to build with them, you might be able to trade one or two of those guys with the Brooklyn picks and get a very significant player. Yeah. Again, I don't know. We don't know which player is going to shake out. A year from now, we're going to see two, three guys in this next year that, oh, who thought they were going to go on the block, and they did. That's the kind of thing that that I would wait for before trading those picks.
So who's going to go on the chopping block here, like, in your opinion?
What do you mean as far as being – oh, yeah, you mean on the Rockets roster?
Yeah, cut or traded, because, like, again, like –
Yeah, so I actually just I tweeted this out. I mean, I think, you know, obviously Jalen, Jabari, KPJ, Tari Shangoon, Amen Thompson, Cam Whitmore, Ty Washington. And then I think on the bubble, I think KJ Martin will probably get traded. I've said it before and it hasn't happened. So what's his value?
Yeah.
I don't know. Late first round pick, I would anticipate. Maybe.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would think so. Good. But yeah. But who knows? It has, you know, the new CBA shifted the landscape on the value of those picks. I don't know, but it seems like he should. Jayshon Tate, I think, is, you know, on the bubble. Josh Christopher, definitely. And Usman Garuba is a maybe. I think he's, you know, gonna have an opportunity to impress Ime because there is a lack of bigs on this roster, in my opinion. I mean, you know, Jabari plays more of a four and some five, but I mean, you look at what they have really. What I think, if they do make those significant free agent additions, you're probably looking at Şengün, KPJ, Tari, Thompson, Whitmore. I mean, other than Şengün, that's, you don't have much in the way of bigs, really. So that's what I think, you know, where Usman might be able to step in. But to answer your question, KJ, Jason Tate, Josh Christopher, possibly Usman, possibly Ty. There's a lot that's up in the air. The right deal comes along, I think any of those guys certainly are expendable.
I feel so bad for Josh Christopher because it's like, really, when you look at him, he hasn't done anything to not earn a roster spot. It's just there's so many guys in front of him. Like, and it's been like that every single year. I don't even think this is like – I'm not even blaming Steven Silas here. I think he's actually – in this regard, I think he's not done anything. Like, it's just like KPJ, Jalen Green, and like – Eric Gordon, all these guards were in front of him, and he just was the odd man out always. And it's hard for him to find any source. It was hard for him to find any source of stability. And I actually thought that first year in particular, he was good. Last year, rough season, but it's like it's cold to cut someone after one rough season or trade someone after one rough season. But that might be the case. I mean, that might be the most realistic cut guy.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, you mentioned earlier about the team being cold and calculated. I actually would kind of slightly disagree because I don't think we've seen it yet with the roster. Like, we've seen a few guys get moved, Christian Wood, but like they've been very patient with a lot of these guys, just drafting, leaving them on there. I don't think there's been enough turnover, but I would fully anticipate it this summer. So let's see what if Stone does kind of pull out the cold calculated handbook and, you know, moves on from some of these guys.
This is a big test for him, man. This is his first real summer with cap space. This is where like careers are made, you know, to be honest.
He Amen's a great pick, so I'm thrilled with it. I'm not knocking it, but I kind of came into this like Harden, Wemby, or Scoot could sort of save his bacon. I mean, maybe getting Cam Whitmore really helped him out a lot, but you know, now he has to do some GMing. He has to do some real trades, creative moves to get this team going in an upward direction beyond just, hey, roll out a few basketballs and let these young guys learn. He's going to have to be aggressive.
It's easy to win trades when you're rebuilding, right? It's easy to bend. It's not easy. It's like a lot of teams suck at it, but
no grading on wins, right? You're just grading on talent, potential, future. So correct. Like you don't care about taking on bad contracts for short term and all that. So you're right.
Yeah, it's much easier to sell when you're rebuilding. All the moves that the Rockets have been making, even though you and I might think they're pretty smart moves, right? This is really where you kind of make your bacon. You know, like the summer is like this, and I do hope he kills it because I would like him to be here long term. Enough goodwill has been earned with me for him to be here long term. I'm just going to be interested to see what they do. Like, I'm scared. I'm nervous. I want them to be a little bit conservative, but I don't suspect that's going to happen. I suspect they're going to go. They're going to be kind of like, you know, 4-year-olds with kind of a sugar rush. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see the kinds of names that they're able to actually sign. Seems like Dylan Brooks is a lock. Like, the language you see is like, that's done. And these other guys.
Feels that way. You never know, though, with free agency, but it feels that way, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, I'll have you on after this is all over, after everything's been done and, you know, mountains have been moved, and we'll talk about it.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
Yeah. All right. Tell the people where we can follow you on social media and find you.
Sure. It's at ClutchFans. Website is ClutchFans.net. And Rockets 24/7, basically.
All right. Sounds good. Talk to you later, man.
All right. Thanks, Alma.